Welcome back to another episode of Storytime with Brandon. I'm your host, Brandon Patrick. Today on the show, we've got a special guest. We always have a special guest, but this guy I love talking to more than a lot of people. It's just fascinating, man. Comedian, rapper, NPR host, Mr. Paul Nakatura. It's a good conversation. We both have delicious baritone voices, you know? So, just in terms of audio, you guys win, okay? This is going to be a real audio treat for you, all right? Enjoy.
My co-worker's neighbor said the word nigga to me?
Oh,
they
shit.
They didn't call me a nigga.
They just said the word.
Yeah, and so... yeah, of course, I was a white person, like...
Of course.
Why else would this be a story?
Right.
Okay, so I go to my coworker's house for a party. Like, he's just throwing a party. Some coworkers are there, neighbors, friends of his. And it's chill. There's hella alcohol. Oh my God. I've never seen so much alcohol in one place that wasn't selling it.
Oh, they had like a real set, like a Gatsby style setup.
Yeah, it was so much fucking alcohol. It was ridiculous. and I drink alcohol a lot. So this
so you party.
Yeah, yeah. So we're standing around. I'm in between two of my white coworkers and talking to this lady. And we're just shooting this shit. The host of the party, he comes in and he's like smacked. He's like been at this all day. And he comes in and he's like, we're going to be wrestling on the front yard here in about 10 minutes.
Hell yeah.
It's like, chill hell out, yeah, bro. So I'm like, all right, yeah, let's take bets, man. I got who's doing the side bets? I got money on my man, on my coworker, right?
Of course.
And just making jokes. And the ladies and his neighbor, this white lady was like, sorry. This white lady was like, I don't know if you want to make those bets. My husband's still not here yet. I was like, wait. What's the stats on your husband? She's like, oh, he's a 6'3", 200 or like 300 pound black man. And I was like, okay, never mind. I'm betting on your husband now. Forget that. I'm standing there in between, flanked by my two white coworkers, and the lady's kind of in front of me, and she starts to say, and like, what fucked me up was that neither of my coworkers heard it, and so
so you're just in the nigga vortex of like, only you know this horrible thing.
This is how it happened. So she was like, oh, we have a joke in my house that you can't renege on bets. And I was like, uh-oh. It's like she's walking up to it. Oh gosh.
Yeah.
So she's like, yeah, you can't renege on bets in my house, because if you do that, you become the renega.
It sounds like she said that a lot, by the way.
Yeah. Like, no, it was honestly impressed with her use of the A. It wasn't the ER on the in this conversation at all. So I mean, progress.
A little, yeah, it's like I'm proud of you, but like, you still shouldn't do that.
Yeah, she was like, because I've told this story a couple of times since, like, it was like, messed me up because, she, sorry. So she walks up to it, says it, and like, one of my thoughts after like reassessing this was like, yo, like, I'm judging him now. Because you couldn't keep that in the house.
Yeah.
But so my only play was, and shout out to the coworker that did this, because this person also helped me get through another racist thing at a bar.
Oh shit.
Like a few days before this, like we were closing down a bar, and like a person that I'll consider a friend, just like was really misunderstanding something racist. I don't even remember. And like I was explaining, and I got to the point where I was like, all right, dude. Hey, man. And I tapped my coworker and was like, can you be a white person and say this to him? It's like, yeah, I can do that. And I was like, stepped off, and he got mad that I stopped talking. And I was like, no, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to be engaged in this conversation that you two are now going to have.
Yeah, I
can't do it anymore. This is emotional labor that you're asking of me. And no,
you need to be compensated for your time. If you're going to have to explain any sort of concepts.
Yeah. So I turned to my coworker and I was like, and I just ran down the last like 90 seconds of what had just happened. I just told her straight. I was like, well, in her house, if you renege on bets, you become the renigger. And that's a thing she just told me. And the lady like fucking froze. So I just said what happened. And now my two coworkers are engaged, and I stopped talking.
Yeah.
Because now it's super fucking awkward for her. It's so awkward. Like,
as it should be.
Because, like, she starts trying to explain and, like, walk it back. Yep. And, she ended up talking to me later in the night, and, like, but like, yeah, after, like, she explained it, and, like, my coworker was like, all right, look. She was doing her best to walk it back, and like she eventually like apologized and like walked away to a different part of the party. But like the punchline that I realized was, as she started walking that back, she in turn had become the renigger.
Oh shit. Oh shit. Yo. That's why you're the best and worst person for this to happen to, because
you know
you're smarter than the average bear, you know, and you're not confrontational, but you will point something out. Like if something's fucked up, you'll be like, "Hey, did you know that's fucked up?" And now they got to live with it. They can't play victim because you're not escalating the situation. You're just like, "Hey, did you see what you just did? Explain yourself." That's dope.
And like, I didn't even tell her to explain herself. I was just like, oh no, this just happened.
Yeah.
And like she was just like completely red in the face, like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't have. Yeah, you definitely shouldn't have.
See, the way you handled it, when she retells the story, she can't flip it as you flipped out in any way. There's no room for her to be anything but the villain. That's what's beautiful about it.
Oh, I doubt she retells this story.
Yeah, she probably doesn't now that I think about it. Just because
she's going to have to say nigga again.
Yeah. If you had escalated it, she would be like, you know, I just said this and then he took it this way. And then, but now that you put her in that position and you're like, hey, this is what she said. What do you guys think about that? You know, it's just like, it's like, fuck. She fucked up.
It was because I couldn't. I was trying to think of like how best can I like in the, because, and I'm like drinking, and like had he passed out around the weed yet? I smoked weed with an old white guy. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, white guys are old. White dudes are getting into weed now.
He seems like he's been into it for a while, but I'm not gonna.
Okay,
I can't give you too many clues because then people are gonna know who this story was.
Yeah. Because
none of my coworkers are actually involved. It would just happen to be my coworker's neighbor,
and right?
Got real comfortable.
That'll happen, man.
And I think it's partially, it like when you say I'm the best and the worst for that to happen. I think the reason why it happens so often is because of how funny I am. Like,
yeah,
I take this personality with me everywhere.
Exactly.
And people think. That I'm gonna be the person you can say wildly offensive shit to,
because yeah. I'm a comic.
But like, no,
you're still a dude.
Yeah, like I'm funny all the time, but like, yo,
yeah. people forget that, like, you are more than your art. They, like, there's a person behind it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People get, when they find out you're a comic, they want to run every offensive thought they've ever had.
Oh my God. What, it's like, what the fuck?
It's like,
and,
bro.
Like, and like white comics do that shit too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
White comics. White comics will like try to work out a shitty bit with you. Like without hesitation, like without asking. Yeah. Like, cause it's like, they'll ask, but they'll ask in a way that's like, this is offensive as fuck and I know it, but
yeah,
can I say this? It's yep. Like, I'm not the person. There's no arbiter of this.
Yeah.
If you say things and people don't like them, say it different or some shit. Or maybe that's not the thing to be fucking saying.
Find out why you even want to say it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody does that anymore. Nobody even explores why they want to say these fucked up things.
Why they
want
to share that shit with the world. What the, like, what about this? Why, like, what about this is going to, like, did she think I was gonna fucking laugh?
Bro, I think she did. I think she, not only did she think you were gonna laugh, she thought you were gonna, like, kind of give her a pass and be like, oh, okay, Sarah, I see what you got going on or whatever, you know, like, people really, they hear comic and they go, well, this is a, they have that like 1980s version of a comic, like, this person's a junkie drug addict who doesn't give a fuck
didn't
about
even
anything.
Know I was a comic.
Oh, really?
She didn't even know I was a comic. No, all she knew about me was that I work at NPR.
Well, like, she's just out of pocket as a human. She needs she needs a basic recalibration.
Like, I'm funny, and I carry this person. Like I said, I carry this personality all the time.
Of course.
But like, she got familiar with somebody that works at fucking NPR.
I can see if it was like Hot 103 or like, you know what I mean? But like, NPR
is, I used to work,
like,
there, but yeah. Yeah, like,
Jesus.
That's all she knew about me.
So your name does not look like a black dude's name.
If you don't know about East Africa.
Okay. So like, so it's East African. It's not Japanese.
Yeah, my father's from Uganda. No. So that's a little education here. If it didn't have the Y in it,
yeah,
at the beginning, then yeah,
it would be Japanese.
It'd be Japanese. Okay. But that NYA, you see that a lot. You see a lot of NYs in Africa. Like Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah. Well, she's from Mexico though.
Yeah, that's the Lupita part.
No, I think people are from somewhere else. I think she just happened.
Yeah, no,
to be.
I'm pretty sure she's part Nigerian.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Facts. But yeah, the NY is the identifier to make it African.
Got you. Okay. So you work in public radio. Do you have people who know your voice but not your face, and they ever get like uncomfortable? They get comfortable assuming you're something else, and they might slip in some weird shit. Does that happen? Or,
I mean, the Japanese things happened my whole life.
Yeah.
Whole life, like, they're looking at me like, okay, it doesn't look Japanese. Maybe he got adopted by Japanese people. Let me find out. Like,
oh, and they'll just ask.
Yeah.
The fucking, okay.
And like, what irritates me is like, there's ways to find this shit out.
Yeah.
But like, people think that they're well-rounded or whatever the fuck, and so like, guessing that it's Japanese is like, oh, I'm so smart. Hey, is that name Japanese? Like, no, actually it's Ugandan, and you'd know that if you knew more Africa stuff.
Yeah, man, people don't, I don't know anything about Africa, you know. I
ooh, okay, so now we're talking about Africa. Let me tell you because I didn't go to Uganda until I was in my 30s. I just went in 2018.
Okay.
And this is what I love to tell people about my takeaways as an American a black Kansan going to Uganda for the first time. One, the roads. Holy shit. We are coddled as American drivers. Our interstates and roads are wide as fuck.
Yeah.
And like paved everywhere. The potholes were so ridiculous. I was there for 9 days. We changed a tire on the rental twice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So we're talking like
these roads can get fucked up.
Like and rural. Then, oh, it's because the heat, probably, right?
And the roads are made from this red clay that's in Uganda.
Okay.
It's like the dirt's like this red clay and closer to Lake Victoria, but there's like this volcanic ash in the countryside where the reason I was there was for my father's oldest brother passed away, and they were doing his rites at my grandfather's farm.
Okay.
So because like there's like a gravesite there for family, and so now my dad's patriarch, and so me and my sister being there was like a good look for the family.
Yeah, you gotta have everyone's gotta show up.
Yeah. In another story about my Uganda trip, I became an international recording artist.
There we go.
But no, that's not the meat. I want the other takeaway that I love to share with people is I was there. It was about 4 days in, and I've had this like weird feeling. And then like 4 days in, I finally figured out what it was. So we stop at like a roadside market, and one more thing about the roads real quick. The way that they control speeds on the rural, like at the rural places, yeah, is that outside of the little city, like the closest two borders of the town on the road have one huge fucking speed bump. And what they do first is like they have these on the outside, they have like these tiny speed bumps that warn you.
Yeah.
And then like two kind of medium ones, and then one that will totally fuck up your life if you're speeding. Like they're really high. So that shit's fun too. But no, so I'm at this roadside market, right? And my dad goes to like get something or whatever the fuck. I'm like, hey, I'm about to go over to that store and get some whiskey because I'm on fucking vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the middle of the day. And so I go to the store, get my little whiskey, and then I'm standing outside the car, like just waiting on people to get back or whatever. And I'm by myself. And then it hit me, the weird feeling that I was feeling. And it was, oh shit, I'm not black here. If I don't speak, nobody knows I'm different. I don't have any set of eyes on me. This is the weirdest thing. Because whiteness is so prevalent in my life, my mind immediately went, whoa, this is how white people feel back home.
Yeah.
I'm literally invisible.
Like, yeah, you can move around. You can be yourself. There's nothing.
It was, but like, no, and then my mind was like, because I have a public facing job, comedian, rapper, I'm hyper visible upon being black. Like, mm-hmm. just like visible, super visible because being black, and then because like I'm talented or whatever, I'm hyper visible, right? And then my mind was like, oh my God, I cannot imagine what life is like for the untalented white person that gets told they have privilege.
Wow, that's a perspective.
Cause like they're even more invisible because they're not like they're not talented and like getting praised for like their thoughts.
Yeah, they're mediocre.
Yeah. And that I had like those four steps happen in succession. Like those thoughts happened really, really fast. First, yeah. It was like, oh wait, I'm not black. Oh fuck, this is what white people feel like. Oh shit, I'm talented, so I'm super visible. Oh shit, mediocre white people are extra invisible and they're being told they have a privilege. That shit has to be infuriating.
That's why when they heard about critical race theory this week, they were just like, Nope. Final straw. And it's like, no, guys, this doesn't have to be an attack on your identity.
It isn't. And like one of the comments I made while we were having our talk show was having Critical Race Theory talk, I was like, Critical Race Theory doesn't pit white people against black people. It pits white people against accurate history.
Yep.
And they know that it's baked in, and they don't want that fact to be accepted. That's the long and short of it, that they know that it's there. They know why. They know that it's there. They know why it's there. They know we all know. There's no way that you don't know.
Man, I met a chick that doesn't know.
That's impossible. You know that black people were enslaved.
Yeah. Like, so she thought, so we were talking about, it was on Juneteenth. We went out to get pizza at this place. It was me and another black dude. He's technically biracial, but he's a black dude in my eyes. You know what I mean? Like, if you're in, you're in.
And if you can see it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So she was like, what are you guys celebrating? We're like, we're out for Juneteenth. And she goes, what's that? And we're like, today is Juneteenth. And she was like, like June 19th? Is that what you guys call it? And I was like, it's like a federal holiday now. It's like a, you know, it's kind of a big deal. And she was like, well, what is Juneteenth? And I was like, well, so I'm explaining it to her. I'm like, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation did not actually free the slaves. It was merely a suggestion, really, that like, hey,
yeah,
I know you guys are trying to leave, but you guys don't have to be slaves while you're where you are. So enjoy. You know, it didn't do anything. There was no teeth to it. There was no enforcement of it. So everyone, you know, oddly, you know, everyone was like, fine, you know, whatever, you guys are free, except for Texas, because Texas is like, you know, fuck that. Yeah. Like, we're not, what? Free them.
Right. They literally were killing messengers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They were like, stop. Like, don't. Like, fingers in the ears. Do not get that out. And so I'm explaining this to her, and she's like, well, Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. And then they got, like, they all got to live in, like, houses and stuff. And I was like, what are you talking about? That's not what happened. Like, first of all, they were generally so poor, they had to then go work for their slave masters for technically less than what they hadn't been paid. You know what I mean? Like, now they're having to pay for their own clothes, their own room, their own board, and they're having to work these fields. It's like, it was not even comfortable to be a black person in the South.
We act like it's a light switch that got flipped.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah, like, if we're celebrating a holiday that happened in 1865 and the civil rights movement happened in 1965?
Yeah, yeah.
My mom was born in 58.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't on cake. Like, they forget, they hear the Martin Luther King content of the character, not color of the skin, and that's as deep as they go, because they know he talks about some other stuff.
Darker. It's just gonna get darker.
It gets like, yeah.
Like, no, they know it's there. They don't want to know. And they definitely don't want to admit to us that they fucking know.
Right, because that's pain. That's, now they're having to apologize for something that technically they didn't do, but they're still benefiting from you know?
Facts. Yeah.
They're still enjoying the, you know, sometimes as a comic, you get free food or whatever in the green room or whatever it is, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I've been in the green room and I'm not performing, but someone will give me like a burger or some fries or whatever. And it's like, wow. If I speak up and say, hey, I'm not performing or whatever it is, then they will charge me for this thing. You know, I will have to pay some sort of thing. And I don't want to do that. So it's easier for me to just be like, yeah, 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 I'm supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier because when I tell you like your behavior is fucked up in any way, okay, you have two options. You can either correct the behavior or you can ignore the advice. And if you ignore the advice, you were still, you're, in my opinion, more guilty. Mm-hmm. Because now you're willingly and like willfully doing the wrong thing.
Right. Right.
And there's no fix. That's the problem, is there's no easy fix. You know, reparations won't necessarily fix it. Tax-free everything won't fix it. I've heard all the proposals. Nothing will fix it short of
an honest telling and an honest acceptance of our history.
Exactly.
But there are so many people in this country hell-bent on that not being a thing, because anything that they've earned in life, I mean, we're not telling people that they didn't work hard. We're just telling them other people had to work harder.
Yeah. And I imagine being a black dude in public radio, you had to work harder than a white dude in public radio. Just based on the fact that you're the only black dude I know in public radio. You know what I mean? I know people... Like, I'm looking at the spread that I know, and I'm like, you know, this guy is an outlier.
Yeah. Yeah. My boss actually is a black man.
Really?
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
He's really cool. Yeah.
That's what that the joke I did at your show that, like, that rooted in a lot of accuracy.
Yeah. That was a fun show.
I actually showed him that joke because one of my friends at the hot girl table got me video of it, and he's seen that joke and he's like, dude, this is hilarious.
Shout out to the hot girl table, man.
That was fun.
That was, yeah, yeah. It was like a bunch of just beautiful women that I knew from Twitter that just showed up in the real world. And I was like, wow.
That's tight.
Wow. Because of funny? Wow.
Because of funny. Yeah, man.
Yeah, they like, weren't coming otherwise.
I mean, comedy got me into radio.
Really? So you did comedy before you did radio?
So I'm just gonna tell a bunch of stories?
You can just tell as many as you want. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm 21 in 2008. And okay. I'm in Manhattan, Kansas, and my friend's working at Carlos O'Kelly's, and he's on the radio that there's a comedy contest. And he was like, dude, you're funny. You should try this. And I was like, I'm cool. And he was like, first prize is $1,000. I was like, I can try.
Yeah, there it is.
So it's a four-week contest. And I'd never told a joke on stage before this. And the first week was 3 minutes, second week was 5 minutes, next week was 7 minutes, and the next week was 10 minutes. I did original material each week.
Smart.
And
smart.
And the guy that was organizing the contest, he put up a wet paint wiki page that outlined that laid out what comedy was in like an academic format. Okay. So like what a bit is, what a set is, what a joke is, what misdirection is.
So there's a lot of newbies in the contest.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of new people in this contest. Like I doubt anybody had probably two or three people had been on stage to tell a joke before this.
Yeah, Manhattan's kind of weird where there wasn't a scene for a while, and there's still kind of goes back and forth.
And be honest, I'll put that scene on my back.
There we go.
But no, so he puts up the site and laying out how to be a comic, like academically how to be a comic. Yeah. And like my mind just starts racing like after the first week. Cause the first week I just did material that I had made up or whatever. But after reading that whole that page, like it really, really like helped me figure it out, and like my mind started like creating like in that way, and I survived all the eliminations and I ended up winning this contest.
Ooh, nice.
The contest was actually, it was on Wednesdays, but it was supposed to just be really a promotion for their Thursdays when they were bringing professional comics in. but the contest had the bar packed.
Of course, everyone's gonna bring everyone they know.
And I didn't have people coming to see me, and I was crushing it in front of these people's friends. So,
oh, that's dope.
Yeah,
that's a good feeling.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then so I got part of the contest winnings was emceeing the Thursdays. And so nobody came to the Thursdays. And I was just like getting in reps as a comic.
Yeah.
And it was fun, but it was a little stressful.
Hosting is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, because comics get mad if you don't warm the crowd up enough. Like if you bomb as a host, comics are pissed.
Yeah, man. That's why when I travel on the road, I pick my hosts. I'm like, I'm not leaving this up to chance. Like, this needs to be. Bro, I've seen too many shit, man. Like, white guys saying the N-word on stage, like chicks just going really, really graphic into like abortion stuff. And it's like, you know, you only have 5 minutes or, you know, 10 minutes to do this. And you're talking about really complex things in front of drunk people, and they're just not trying to process that. Like, hosting is so fucking hard. People don't understand that it's not even remotely about you as the host.
Oh, so I win the contest, right?
Yeah.
And then I won it in November 2008. I became a financial dropout of K-State that following May, and like the recession was happening, so I just had to come home.
Financial dropout means you just couldn't pay tuition, but your grades were okay.
Yeah, my grades were fine, but like I couldn't. I maxed out my student loans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. No, that happened to me.
And so I couldn't get any more student loans. And so, like, college is over for me now.
Yeah.
So I'm back here and did nothing for a solid year and a half because there was nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a job back in Manhattan at a Longhorn Steakhouse that was opening up, and working at Longhorn for about 6-7 months, and at this point, as far as the contests are concerned, I won the first one, I judged the second one, hosted the third one, and then by the time I was hosting the fourth one, the group of radio stations that put the contest on brought me on as their night guy for top 40.
Oh, nice.
And like had me as I was half board op for Kid Craddock in the morning. Kid Craddock died while I was board oping. Well, he died the day before I had to go back in to board op it. So, by the time I was hosting the fourth one, I was their top 40 night guy at a board op at the radio station. And then 6 months later, they teach me how to produce commercials, crush that. And I use that skill set that I attained there to apply Hot 103.
Man, so.
And so I get to Hot 103 in September of 2013.
Okay, so that's about when I was in Kansas City at that time.
And spent 2.5 years there before just walking out.
That'll happen there. That's a lot of that.
And then 2 years, then like 2.5 years just making sandwiches at the Bronx. And then got a weekend announcer gig here.
So you were doing drops and you were doing you produced whole segments. Is basically what you learned that got you into 103.
More commercials.
Okay, so like 60-second spots, 30-second spots, that sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's what kept me from doing radio. I actually...
What about
I did 5 years of radio. I did 5 years of a segment on the D.L. Hughley show.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. It was D.L.'s book club. It was like... It was always in the top three rated segments on his show. And I kept trying to parlay it into something consistent with radio. And they were just like, all right, send us your, send us some drops, send us some ads, send us some blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, I only have these segments. This is all I have. And they're like, oh, that didn't know.
Damn.
Yeah, I was like, but I'm a comedian with a following. And like, I know I'm a quick learner. I just have to see it done. And they were like, right. Yeah, right. See it done somewhere
I'm
else.
I'm a hands-on person. Like I,
yeah.
I have to learn by getting reps. You can't
exactly.
I can't just read a thing and go do it.
I called Roy Wood Jr., who's like the best comedian I know.
He's so fucking funny.
And he did radio forever.
You know him personally?
Yeah. He's a good friend. He's doing my podcast.
That's
in tight. September. Yeah.
That's
he's a good tight. Friend. Shout out to Roy Wood.
Hell yeah.
He's the kind of dude that I'll text. I'll be like, hey, man, well, you know, how do I do this?
He was carrying the Daily Show for a while.
Still is. You know what I mean?
Man.
Still is. It's only because Trevor's more famous that I think it's Trevor's show. But Roy is.
No, I think Trevor's a little more solid with books.
That could be true. And, I mean, he's a good look for Comedy Central. Like, we have an African on television every night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, not African-American. We have an African.
An African. Yeah. OG. We got a guy with an accent.
Yeah. But, man, Roy, like, I'll text him a question, and he'll call me and be like, hey, man, basically you're fucked, but here's what I would do. Because I was like, hey, man, how do I do these ads? Like, because there's, like, spec scripts. So, like, in Hollywood, if you haven't written a pilot and you want to write for a TV show, you can write what's called a spec script, which is like you just write an episode of The Simpsons or Family Guy.
Okay.
So you just write it out, the whole script, and you pretend that you're in that writer's room. So you do your character motivations and everything, and then you submit that spec script and you say, hey, this was a non-commissioned spec, and they'll look at it, they'll look at the quality of the work, they'll compare it to the show, and they'll say, yeah, you get the voice of the show, so yeah, we'll bring you on or whatever, which is okay. How television works. So I was like, radio probably works the same way. I can do spec ads, you know, I can fake ads, you know, and then we got the grown and sexy party and then the white party, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. It should like, work like that.
He was like, you can do it, but if you don't know how to do it, it's going to be very, very difficult because you have to do in 60 seconds, you have to do three different sound beds. You have to change your cadence and tone three different times within the ad, and you have to convey all the information necessary while being entertaining to listen to. And I was like, so I'm fucked. And he's like, yeah, you're fucked. I was like, cool, man. Thanks for taking the time. You know, like,
yeah, not right. And like, for me, like, I didn't start listening to NPR until I left 103. And my girlfriend at the time, she grew up on NPR. And so, like, didn't feel obligated to listen to Hot 103 while we were in the car anymore and started listening to NPR. And I was like, what is this? She's like, what? Like, what is this? Like, wait, don't tell me or something. Like, really,
yeah.
Car talk was my shit. Like, I was really into those. Because it was only, like, on the weekends when we were, like, moving around. So, the weekend programming. And then, like, started listening to NPR One. And then, like, that just became, like, my day was, like, listening to NPR podcasts while I'm making sandwiches at the Bronx because they would let me have headphones. And then a job, like, randomly was like looked at the jobs, and they had a job for a reporter that was a reporter for race and culture in Kansas City.
Okay,
and I'm like, I can do that.
Yeah,
like if my radio prowess can get me in the door, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that job because I'm not a journalist, and they're looking for a journalist. I lost to a real winner in Michelle Tyrene Johnson. She was amazing. She should still fucking be here, but that's another story.
Yeah.
That I can't completely fucking tell. Anywho,
But it's good when someone qualified gets it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. But someone else that also isn't here, Sylvia Marie Gross, who I applied with and like interviewed with, she just kept my information around, and then the weekend announcer position opened up, and she passed my information along. I was like, oh, like I was at the Bronx listening to Embedded from NPR, and I got an email saying, hey, there's this weekend announcer for job. Your email got passed along. Do you want to apply?
Yeah. So,
abso-fucking-lutely. So I apply and like don't get an interview at first. And like, cause I had sent my my Hot 103 and my Manhattan air check, like my pow kind of radio check.
Yeah, yeah. And they're the and opposite.
I got nothing. And so I took it upon myself to I made a fake newscast called Week in a Minute, and just ran over a Trump story with some context, and did it was the week that Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade had both died. And I just tacked that on the end of the newscast or whatever. And like within hours of sending that, I got a response back. And I was basically fucking hired before I walked in the building. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, that initiative is crazy.
And so that's what I tell. I show radio students. Yeah. I show them both of those air checks, because and what I tell them is the commercial one, I'm so good at, I'm like, that's, it's such a good air check that I know it can get me a mid-market job anywhere in this country. But that news one that I did,
yeah,
that's what got me on here. And like, so like, know your audience.
And you're happy where you are.
This is my favorite job I've ever had. This is my first full-time job I've ever had.
Yeah.
Like, I got health insurance for the first time last year. Like, comedy did that.
That's dope. I always hear about guys getting jobs outside of comedy that are like really good jobs, and it's like, that's going to make the comedy suffer because you don't get to talk to people. But you got the best of both worlds, where you still get to talk to people at work. Mm-hmm. You got your ear to the streets, and you can insert personality into your job. Bro, that's dope. That's dope.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And like, since it's like such a, because of the way I talk on air, like it, that's a, it's, I'm not gonna call it a game, but it's funny to me to play that character when I'm doing that. And so like, if I like stutter or like flub a word or something, like you can hear my voice start laughing. Like, yeah. I'll still be talking, but you can hear me laughing. And I get compliments on that all the time, because people are like, you mess up, you know you messed up, but you don't let it fuck with you, and you and you're smiling. I can hear you smiling, and that in turn makes me smile. It makes me think about, like, when I fuck up, I don't have to like beat myself up about it. Like, it's a complete, it's really fun. And like, the listeners are such wonderful fucking people.
Yeah. You guys have the caring audience. Your audience isn't there to hear the new DaBaby song. They're here to educate themselves and better themselves.
Mm-hmm. Know about what's going on. Like to the point where one of our listeners, he's the dean at the Kansas City, former dean of the Kansas City Guild of Organists. And
nerd.
And I got to be special guest at their gala this year.
Oh, nice.
Which was on Zoom. Yeah, like shit like that. Like, and the reason why I got to do that is because one day he like emailed us like trying to find me. And because I wasn't on the website yet, and he emailed us trying to find me. They passed along the email to me. I emailed dude, hey, thanks for the kind words, blah blah blah. Emailed me back, and I kept emailing him back, and we just emailed back and forth every now and then. like, shout out to my guy Boyd.
Yeah.
This old white dude that just loves, he loves Face Face now.
Face Face is dope. People should love Face Face. I remember we put that first video out. I was like kind of mad at you because I am an aspiring musician as well, but I will never put anything out. I don't think.
It's a tough thing to get comfortable with doing. I wrote my first rap at 11 years old. I didn't show people a song until I was like 25.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and it was because I was always a solid rapper, but like I didn't really hit my stride until 2012.
When did you even decide to go public with music? Like, what made you say this is good enough to throw out there?
I have friends that were making music, and they were making really solid music and like letting me feature on stuff. And so they were releasing stuff that like I was on, and because I was in radio, I got to record my whole first project at the station, like at night.
Oh, that's smart.
And they don't care if you do that. Nah, I'm doing this right now. I'm at work right now.
No, that makes sense. I'm at work right now, but they don't know that I'm doing this. they would be very upset if they're like, what, you did a podcast? No.
Yeah, like they're radio stations are surprisingly chill about that shit. Even 103 was chill about that. But no, what had happened was that I had I learned to record in a multi-track setting.
Yeah,
I learned how to do that and like mix stuff and was like, oh wait, I can buy beats and put out my own shit if I want.
Yeah,
and then And after I like, I made an intro to my first mixtape, and like played it for a few people, and one of them was like, "Yo, this is how you rap from now on. Holy shit, you have something here."
Yeah.
And then I just happened to meet Ryan, my bandmate, because I was living with one of the comics from the contest, one of the finalists, my guy Cody Dietrich, And Cody was, he knew Ryan existed, and Ryan was in KC doing music and stuff. Ryan happened to come visit because Ryan's older brother and Cody were like childhood friends. And so Ryan and his brother came to visit, and like we have a joke in Face Face that 1 in 7 freestyles is gonna be good. Like the other 6 are trash.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But that day that he came over, Ryan beatboxed, and like I had like been rapping quite a bit at that point, and Ryan beatboxed, and I had one of my good freestyles, and we've been making music ever since.
What does he do? Does he just beatbox, or does he do like production, or
no? Every single thing that isn't me rapping is him.
Okay, so this is like a Prince and Morris Day situation where
I write everything that like I rap, but like he does all the music. When we're live, he plays our beats from a sample machine and drums live while I rap, and like we don't have any backing vocals, and I have to push the full album out every single show. We give people the same energy at like, and when I was like, I said this last week and a half ago, was like, we're about to play a coffee house and we're going to give it the exact same. We're about to play a coffee house at 6 p.m. We're about to give it the same energy of this late night bonfire fueled rager that we just played at a house.
Well, like, that's how you win, bro. That's how you win.
Yeah, we go hard every fucking show, no matter what. 2 people, 10 people, 200 people, you're gonna walk away if they face it.
Man, every time you guys play, I'm out of town. I mean, because I live out of town now, but like when I was in Kansas City, I was like, man, these guys are fucking dope. That first video that she dropped, man, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, he's a rapper.
Yeah, well, and that's what like my life is currently. I'm because we're in album mode finally. Like I got past writer's block and like I'm cooking, and I'm just waiting for the Face fans, the KCUR fans, mm-hmm. and the comedy fans to realize I'm the same fucking person.
People aren't used to that sort of multifacetedness, you know? That's a feather in your cap, because that's, you're not supposed to be on NPR and know how to rap.
And that's what I tell people. They're like, what's the music like? I'm like, I rap like I work at NPR.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not like geeky. It's like good rap. Like you have bars. And you
I can fucking rap. No, I know this.
Yeah, it's not. You're underselling it.
Somebody pissed me off a week ago because I should have known going in, but I asked a comic, do they think I'm better at rap or comedy? Because in my mind, I'm the better comic. I'm a solid rapper, but he was like, oh no, hands down, rap, like easy. And it just made me mad to like write better jokes. Like that's what that did to me.
That's good to get motivated like that. A lot of people just say, oh, you're wrong, and just don't, you know what I mean? Like, just don't do anything.
Yeah, so now I'm like, oh, I'm going to prove that I excel at both. Like, because it was a open mic host, and I hadn't been going. And like, I'm finally getting back out there and doing stand-up. Like, oh, man. Like, I should have been... 103 has this thing where they say nobody can be bigger than the company. And like, yeah. So they want you to be a personality on air and then it stops.
Yeah, you can't be too big.
And so for me, I was really upset because I was like, wait, I'm only in radio because I'm a badass comic. So,
yeah.
And the improv buys ad time. I should be fucking hosting the improv every week or some shit. Like we need to, like, there needs to be a cross promotion. There needs to be like any promotion of me at all.
And then de facto benefit the company.
Yeah. And that just didn't happen. And
yeah, the improv is never going to see it that way.
But like, I didn't approach anybody with this, you know, I just like, I was just kind of hoping it would happen. But like, because I was getting like, because my like my work life was stressful, like just because of my boss, I stand up suffered. Like I barely went to open mics while I was working at 103 because like I stopped writing. Like it fell off entirely. Like it wasn't like shit wasn't funny. But
yeah,
like,
you stop making new funny shit.
Yeah.
That happens to me all the time.
That really, it really shook me. And like, after leaving, and then like, it took me to get a good job to feel good about myself to where like comedy started coming back. And that sucks. I really hate how tied to employment our self-worth can be.
Yeah.
As Americans.
But it's good that like, you did it that thing, way.
The first thing that people ask you about you is, what do you do for money?
Yeah. Because they think they can get it from there. They think they can fill out the rest when they get that piece of information.
Yeah, but also we all know how much we're judging people by like not just how much they make, but what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went from working at Longhorn to working as a top 40 jock in a tiny town to working at a major at a major player in a major market,
mm-hmm.
to making sandwiches. And then
you feel that you were the most creative?
I was also cooking at Tapcade at the same time.
Yeah, their food menu was bonkers.
Yeah.
they have popcorn and buffalo chicken wraps. And it's like, how's that happening? Where's this all taking place, you know?
Oh man,
they had
love my coworkers.
That was a good job. I mean, I bet. I mean, they had a 2-page 12-point font menu. I'm like, y'all make all this?
Yeah,
every day.
There was a lot going on back there.
Yeah,
it's prep kind of sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, because you kinda
Yeah. That was a tough one. And that was the first grill I worked too.
Ooh, so you're just always back there. You gotta stay over that shit.
That was something. But yeah. Employment tie into self worth. It's a trash way to I'm a socialist.
A lot of comics do the opposite of what you did though. When they get a good job, they're like, well, fuck, I got a good job. I don't need to even do comedy. I should only do comedy when my life is bad. And it's like, no, you should get your shit together and get your house in order and then do stand up. Like, you don't, it's not your therapy. It can't be your therapy. Because your therapist will give you feedback, whereas an audience, you get to interpret how they responded.
And a lot of comics interpret that response very inaccurately, because
of course
this has happened to me so many times. I've gone on, done original shit, absolutely crush, know that I crushed, get off, and then someone gets less laughs than me, but like got a couple of laughs, and then like after when everybody's hanging out drinking and whatever, are like, yeah, I did so great. I did really, like, and I want to ask them, like, if you did great, how the fuck did I do?
Dude, the self-awareness of knowing that you're not the best is, I think that's the only reason I'm as successful as I am, because like the show that we did together, you and Jeff Nelson had the best sets. I closed it out. I did not have the best set, and I'm okay with that. You know, like, I understand the mechanics of why I didn't have the best set. There are some things I would change in terms of structure to put myself in a better position, but I'm okay not having been the best. I understand why I wasn't the best, and I can recognize why the best was the best. And I can take that to the next show and make sure that those conditions are more in my favor. And most people just go, oh, the crowd sucked. And it's like, well, you know, why do they suck?
Yeah. Why did they suck?
Yeah.
I saw them laugh at other people.
Yeah.
That self-awareness of comics kind of irritates me.
It's very frustrating. And it's like, it makes you think less of people. Because it's like, well, if you don't, if you can't recognize something that's happening 10 feet in front of you, what else are you missing?
Like, for me, it was like the audacity, like, to like even like hype yourself up afterwards. Like, I know you watched me do better than you. But we saw the same thing. We were both here.
Yeah.
How? And like, what is it about your ego that you need to mention how good you did after the show?
I mean, that tells you the state of their ego right there. You know,
why are we even talking about that? Like,
yeah. The fact that they can't move on from it lets you know that they can't process it.
Ooh, damn. That hurts.
Yeah. I mean, dude, the things that you stick with are the things that you're just not addressing on some level. There's a lot of shit that I'm like, you know, if this changed, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, but I'm not actively making to change.
Yeah.
So I'm still in the situations that I'm in. People don't want to pivot, you know?
Man, I'm having a little trouble with that in my life right now, but I think it'll work itself out if I stick to some things.
I mean, you got a lot of irons in the fire. You know, could you do stand up at face-to-face shows? Could you open up with some jokes?
I bring that to Facebook. Okay, so I'll let out what I want. our project to be.
Yeah.
What I really, really want to do is I want to put out a long form concert, like as a Netflix concert.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense. What I want to do though is have like a tight 30 ready to go.
Yeah.
Do 30 at the front of just me doing stand up. Bring Ryan on to do our new album in the way that we perform the current album.
Yeah.
And then I want to bring on a full band to do the old album with a full band.
So you're doing three different sets. You're doing it the same night?
I want it to be one like long one show.
Jam,
like,
so...
like 90 minutes of, well, 30 minutes of me, then 30 minutes of face, and then 30 minutes with the full band.
Yeah, that's doable. John Mayer did that. Have you seen John Mayer's... I don't know what it's called, but he does three different concerts in the same concert.
Oh.
He does an acoustic show, he does a trio show, and then he does a full band show.
That's tight.
Yeah.
It's getting that tight 30 is my problem. Like, I'm writing the raps. Like, the album's coming together really, really well. And, like, it's different than the first one. And we're taking some musical chances that, like, we haven't. And I'm really excited for it. Like, I'm a better rapper than I was the last album, and it's exciting. It's exciting to think that I'm on the precipice of something really dope. Because yeah. Like face, we don't necessarily, I wouldn't say we have a following, but like. Because we're not a big draw, but like if we show up to your show, we gonna fuck that show up.
Yeah, I mean that's how you become a draw, is you blow the other bands out of the water or whatever it is. You just say, hey, I know you didn't come to see me, but I am better than who you came to see. Like, you probably got more fans off of my show than I got off of my show.
I got a bunch of Twitter followers. I got a bunch of hot girl Twitter followers off of that shit.
Man, they're dope. They're so dope.
Man, that shit was fire.
I was like, this is one of the worst sets I've had recently and one of the best nights of my life. I can't even...
You did great, though. Like, it was... I stepped on your fucking final punchline.
Wouldn't worry about it.
Because, like, as comics, you can see certain things coming.
Yeah.
And, like, I was sitting over there in that corner and like I said it and like I was like, oh shit, I said it because I said it to myself and laughed because it's the fucking punchline.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I said it kind of loud and I was like, oh wait, fuck.
There's a lady that said it kind of loud too, and that, because I only heard her, I didn't hear you, I only heard the lady.
And I was like, that must have been what it is, because like it got reacted to.
But yeah.
Acted to me. Oh no, it was her.
No, it was a lady in the middle of the room that said it, and I was like, damn. Well, there's nothing else that I can do. You know what I mean? It's like, you got like the whole bit, you know, is
because that just, bit's like 5 minutes long by itself.
Well, that bit is, yeah, yeah. I mean, nine. Yeah. And it's, oh, like,
oh jeez.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a very long bit, and it's really punctuated by the last 12 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
And when someone gets the jump on that 12 seconds, it's like,
well, shit.
There's no point to any of this.
There's nowhere you could go.
Yeah. It's like I'll see you later. You know, you guys got it. Cool. All right. But that made me go, okay, you got to get to shit faster. You have to get to it.
I will say
before they think of it.
Yeah, I will say, because like when I thought of it, I was like, "Oh, he's milking it too long."
Yeah, yeah.
That was the thought I had the moment. Like I was like, "Oh no, he say it already, say it, dude." Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And now I do. Like, now it's not a problem.
And then like how the fuck did you feel? Did you pack out that show in Spring Hill?
I mean, I was lucky with the hot girl table. I was very lucky with that. I was fortunate in that I hadn't done stand up in Kansas City in a long time, since like December. And I was just like, hey, I'm not going to be doing stand-up here for a very long time. So if you ever want to see me, this is your chance.
You know,
it's like, you have to make it a special event. Like, this is special because it's not, because it's scarce, because it's not something you can see. Like, when I lived in Kansas City, bro, it was very hard to sell tickets, you know?
Yeah, because you're saturated.
Even to my friends, I would be like, hey, you're my friend, you like me, come to my show. You know, let's just get lunch the next day. And it's like, fuck that. I'm not going to be in town the next day.
Bodies and seats, buddy.
Yeah. And so it's like, and I packed it out in a rainstorm, like a fucking once in a lifetime.
Like, yeah, getting there was scary.
Yeah, I was like, this shit sucks, bro. And then,
but that venue is beautiful.
It is, and I think they did a lot of promotion too, because I mean, there's people I didn't know, you know. Right. But they did a lot of promotion. I did a lot of promotion. It just perfect storm of like that scarcity where it's like,
and shout out to you, because like, my homie was like, hey, Paul should come to this show.
Yeah.
And then, and like, you were like, Paul could tell jokes. And I was like, oh shit. He has no idea this would be my first show in like 2 years.
Oh, well, you know, I like you. You know, it's like, if I can ever help someone I like, I'll do whatever it takes. You know what I mean? Like, I will do. Because that's what happened with me, man. Like, D.L. Hughley used to put me on the road. Like, he'd be like, hey, man, we're going to be here this close to where you live. Come through. Charlie Murphy did the same thing, man. He's like, how far is Dallas from Oklahoma City? I used to live in Oklahoma City. I'm like, it's about 2.5 hours. He's like, all right, cool. You're doing the weekend. It's like, oh, thanks, bro. Like, fuck.
That's tight.
So when that's people, like, way at the top were, like, reaching out to help me, I was like, when I'm in the middle, the least I can do is look at people who I want to be in the position that I'm in and do everything I can to put them in the position that I'm in. Like, I used to have
literally doing that.
Yeah.
Literally doing that right now. Like, when I say right now, we have an intern who was like helping produce the talk show.
Yeah.
And then he just got hired for like the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the thing that I know about him is that he doesn't want to be just producing the talk show. He wants to be on air. And so I brought him into the studio and was like, look, now that you're here, I can unofficially teach you how to do this, because you need to, like, I know that you want to be on air, but to do that, you got to be really good at this board.
Yep. Here's how you get to where you want to get to.
Yeah, so like, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna teach you how to work this board.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, thanks, man, thanks. I was like, I know you got to clock out before we like work, but like,
I'm like,
you can come in whenever I'm in this chair, and I'm going like, all I need is like, probably like 12 solid days,
yeah,
of like a couple hours, and then I'll have him ready to like board up.
And then he can go to people and be like, I know this skill. Oh, where'd you learn this skill? Paul taught me this. Paul taught you that. And then now it looks like, wow, so maybe Paul knows more than we thought. You know, maybe this dude knows more. It's all about seeing people's like possibilities and getting them in the best position to show off what they can do. Like, what when I good at.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in Kansas City, there was only one comedy club. It was the Improv. And they only booked me and two other dudes, basically. You know, it was great for me. It sucked for a lot of other people. So me and my friends were sitting around, and we were like, how do we get, and we were specifically thinking of kind of a not so great comedian, but we were like, as a thought exercise, how do we get that dude from where he is to where I was? At the time, I had just put out my first album, number 2 on iTunes. I was touring with DL. I was touring by myself on off nights. I was like, so what would the path be for that dude? How do we get him from where he is to where I am? Mm-hmm. And so we put together a show called Cream of the Crop. And we said, we're only going to book the best. We're not going to book our friends. We're only booking the best comedians. And we're only putting them in the spots that we think they can do. So if you come to me and you say, I got 15 minutes, Brandon, it's 15 minutes of fire. I say, dope. We're putting you up for 7, okay?
Absolutely.
So then if you can show me in 7 why you deserve 15, then we're going to have a conversation about getting you 20, okay? But if in 7 minutes you can't show me why you deserve 15, I say, hey, you know, let's have you back and do 10. And if that's better, we can reevaluate. And it pissed off a lot of people. you know, it made a lot of people upset. They were like, I'm fucking funny. You should be booking me for blah, blah, blah. And it's like, hey, man, just show me. Yeah, just show me that you can do it. And people took it as, I shouldn't have to prove myself to Brandon Patrick. Fuck Brandon Patrick. And it's like, hey, man, that's...
You became a gatekeeper.
Yeah. And it's like, that's one way to look at it. And I understand that frustration. Another way to look at it is, I'm a dude that you know who's giving you honest feedback.
Mm-hmm.
When I send my videos out to clubs, guess what I don't get? Any feedback.
It's either yes or no.
It's either a yes or nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a yes or it's nothing. And it's like, you're not even prepared to deal with the heartbreak that this job can entail if a guy that you know telling you you're not ready for something hurts your feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the first time I bombed really, really, really hard.
Yeah. How long into comedy was it?
Probably like a year or two.
Okay.
Yeah, about 2 years probably.
Oh, that's a while for the first one.
I was on a fucking tear, man.
Yeah.
Like, started with the contest and then Comedy Thursdays was every week. And then I moved back here and like I had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'm back here and Be Rich books me for when Peachtree was in Power and Light.
Yeah.
And at that point, I had only done college crowds. Mm-hmm. I had done college crowds and then like small town Kansas, I love doing small towns because nothing comes to the small town, so they're excited as shit when comedy comes.
You're a celebrity for that night.
Oh yes, you don't pay for drinks for shit. Small towns are for funny. Actually, they buy you too many drinks.
Yeah, they do.
I've only done college crowds at this point. I'm like 22, and Be Rich books me for Peachtree. I get there, I'm the youngest person in there by a solid 10 to 15 years.
Oh yeah.
And everyone's black. Just been doing white college crowds and white fucking small towns. All I got is dick and race jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Old black people do not fuck with dick jokes.
At all. Unless it's a good one.
It has to be really, really solid.
It's got
to
be really quick, too. They want quick jokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They just want somebody firing off at the hip constantly. Insulting people is a plus.
Yeah.
So all I have is like 7 minutes worth of this shit that's going to crush a college crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it is failing miserably to the point where I get to one of my, well, at the time, funniest jokes that ends with, it's a joke about me jacking off. Is it gay to jack off in the mirror?
Can't say anything gay in front of a black crowd.
Can't say anything gay in front of a black crowd. The joke ends with me like not finishing because we didn't want to get cum on the other guy's thigh.
Yeah. Nope.
Nope. So
I know exactly how that show went. I know exactly what happened there.
So, and the way, and it's a restaurant, right? So like a couple people have like chairs turned
yep.
to like see the stage. I get to the end, that joke's like in the middle of my set. this dude was like, I get to that punchline, and he picks up his chair and turns it back to his table.
Yep.
And it's lit in there, so I can see the whole shit. The dude turns away from me, like, oh wow, okay. And then I like finish my set and like just like beeline out of the restaurant. Like I could have cried. Like I got so much love from comedy before that, to like, that was, it was silent in there. It was so awful, to the point that like I had a high school teacher that was in there.
Yep.
We get to the end of the show, and B. Rich brings me back on stage and has them clap for me and like kind of hugs me, and he's like, man, this is a hard job to do.
Yeah.
That shit, that was soul crushing. Oh my God. But I'll never forget, I was in the bathroom like during like B. Rich's set, I think.
Yep.
And this dude was like, his name was like Antoine. I can't believe I don't remember his name, but he was the auto worker. I know that for a fact. But he was like, yo, man, you funny as hell. So I was like, what are you talking about? Nobody was in there laughing. He was like, oh, you must not could have heard me, because I was in the back cracking the fuck up.
Uh-huh. There's always that one guy, the phantom laugher. It's like, where the fuck were you, bro? Yeah,
like, what are you talking about? Like, oh my God. I was like, dude, I wish you would have moved closer. Like, something. He was like, nah, man, I was back there cracking the hell up. That shit was funny to me. And I, oh man, that was the only saving grace of that night. It was so fucking bad.
Well, thanks for hanging out, man. Thanks for the afternoon, bro.
No doubt. Thank you. All right, dude.
Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Nakatura. Isn't he a treat? I love that guy. You can catch him with Face Face at the Black Box in the West Bottoms. That's going to be July 8th, July 23rd. He'll be at the Replay Lounge in Lawrence. And July 31st, he'll be at the Bottleneck in Lawrence. You can find him on Twitter, Paul Nakatura. PaulNyakatura. And I'm on Twitter as Brandon Comedy. Give me a follow. I could use more followers. Thanks for listening. And a big thanks to the Hot Girl Table. Your show isn't shit if they don't show up. Shout out to the Hot Girls. Goodbye.